This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special Capaccio for you, right?
Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, Carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a Carpaccio.
They like Carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a Carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. Much to cover and discuss with Sal Capaccio from today's events at the stadium. Press conferences galore here. The arrival of receiver Amari Cooper, who will wear number 18 for the Bills. And Sal, I hope this, I don't know if you have this. I'm not sure why, what 18 is. Was that one question that was asked today? I don't believe he's worn 18 at any of his previous stops.
It was asked. He didn't say specifically why 18, but he said he only had two options. He didn't give the other number. So he said he had two options, so he chose 18.
Everything else is taken.
Two is taken, obviously, by the kicker.
Yeah.
Two is taken for now. Yeah. What did you think of Cooper?
You mean personally today?
Yeah.
He's quiet. He doesn't give you much, but not in a doesn't want to talk to the media kind of way. Like a lot of guys you could say that about. Like, yeah, you know, you don't really want to, you know, it's kind of, some guys you're like, yeah, it's kind of a waste to talk to them. They don't really want to talk much. They don't really want to say much. I just think he's quiet. He's kind of unassuming. A little bit like we talked about on the field, which is, you know, he put up all these numbers in his career, and you kind of don't really realize it, you know, because wide receivers, what are they typically known as, right? Divas,
right,
and
right.
Loud. And this is not this guy. He is completely the opposite. Michael Irvin actually was on TV yesterday saying, you know, he knows Amari, and he was saying how he's completely the polar opposite of Stephon Diggs' personality. And I saw that today. For sure. Like he's really quiet. We had a cool conversation off to the side before he went off up to the podium about he's a big chess player. He's real cerebral. He got into chess when he was young, and it's something he likes to spend his time doing. So he's a different kind of guy, I think, than a lot of guys at that position.
I'm not prepared to do a deep dive here, but I would bet there's a correlation between he's put up all these numbers, and yet you don't really think about him that way because he's so quiet. Right? The noisy guys get attention. Like, they're talked about. They're so when they make noise and they either don't perform or they do perform, they're getting talked about because they made noise and they either came through or they didn't come through. If you don't make any noise and all you do is put up numbers, you're going to be under the radar, I think, a lot of the time.
No doubt, I agree with you. But, you know, I think it also fits into what they've kind of been after here in the locker room. And, you know, Josh is the leader now of the offense, the, you know, kind of unquestioned one captain on the team here. You know, they've kind of gone to this model. And even Davante Adams brings them a bigger personality. I'd say that they would, oh, my God, we can't have that guy. You know, we know now that, you know, they were monitoring that situation. But I think this is the kind of player that really fits into what they want to do for that model specifically. I talked to Connor McGovern today in the locker room. He played with Amari Cooper for 2 years in Dallas, and he said the same thing. He's just like, he's a great guy in the locker room. And, he fits in really well regardless of the situation. So, yeah, I think all of that is right.
Did he say anything, though, about whether he was happy with this? Like, I just saw your tweet about the drive. He used the word introspective. Maybe that was his word, driving from Cleveland to Buffalo after this happened. Is he up for it?
Yeah, he said it was like a long drive getting ready for his first day of school, and he had a lot to think about. And when you are a cerebral person like he is, and you think through these things, you can understand that, right? Here's a man who's been in the league 10 years. He's 30 years old. He just got traded. It's the second time he's been traded in the middle of the season in his NFL career. And, you know, he doesn't know really what kind of situation he's going to. But he said he's excited to play with Josh Allen, called him gritty and tough. He called him one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He says he'd be cool playing with him. So I think from that aspect, it sounds like he's pretty excited about it. You know, nothing really came up about Cleveland specifically in that situation, other than, you know, he said something about, you know, they didn't do a lot of winning there, obviously, this year. So, you know, I think that from all indications, just talking to him, and, you know, I think he's thoughtful in the way he answered questions and saying, you know, he had a lot to think about. It was like first day of school. It seemed like, you know, he was kind of embracing this kind of challenge.
I did see that he made mention of how when he was traded the last time, from Oakland to Dallas, I think he said there was a bye week, and so he had extra time to sort of get acclimated. So with that in mind, Sal, like, what kind of challenge do you think there is for him and for the Bills, for Joe Brady, Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, to get this player acclimated and up to speed as quickly as possible? I'm assuming he'll have some role on Sunday, but, you know, remains to be seen if that actually comes to pass and how big a role.
Yeah, so Sean McDermott said to us today that it's still to be determined if Amari plays on Sunday, but Brandon Bean was on the Pat McAfee show and kind of indicated he is going to play, and also to us basically, you know, didn't say it's for sure. But, you know, there's definitely a chance there. Not that Sean ruled it out, for sure. That wasn't the case. And not that Amari ruled it out. It seems like, to me, he's going to probably be available to play on Sunday and be active. And he said, for his part, he said, you know, he has 5 days to get ready with the playbook, but he thinks he can learn enough of it to be able to, you know, play on Sunday and contribute on the field. And then he contrasted that with, you know, he said it's uncharted territory for him because he does have the chartered territory being traded. But as you said, he mentioned it was a bye week the last time. He had a whole week plus to get up to speed with the Cowboys and, you know, to get on the field there. So I expect him to play. What role he has, how much he can do, that remains to be seen. I will tell you that Brandon Bean made it a point today to say, he was asked specifically, Tim Graham asked him the question about, you know, that position and how much more harder or different it would be versus other positions getting up to speed. And Brandon Bean made a point to say it's probably the hardest position, actually, because you have so much chemistry with the quarterback. You have so much you have to learn from a play standpoint, all those kinds of things that go into it. So from that aspect, and that's actually one of the reasons Bean said that they wanted to get this deal done a little bit sooner rather than later, because, you know, last year Russell Douglas comes in at the trade deadline. That's in November. Corner can kind of walk in, you can do your thing a little bit more. Yeah, you still have some defense to learn. Mm-hmm. That's not the case at wide receiver. You get a 3-week head start here before the trade deadline, which is a lot better to bring him in now so he can start, you know, learning the offense.
Sal, I have thought in 24 hours and change here since the trade, there's a lot of, you know, people are very impressed with it. Not just fans either. Most, you know, analysts that I've listened to or read since then seem to think, yeah, this is a great idea for the price, who the player is, you know, some real scrutiny of the drops stat that he's got this year. And, you know, I've come away from what I've read thinking I'm not going to worry about that much at all, that the Cleveland offense is such a mess the way Watson is playing that I kind of want to just, you know, just take him off the hook for whatever has happened with the Browns. I don't know if you'd go that far, but have you also kind of heard, you know, gotten the vibe here that, you know, the Bills did a great job? And I know we've talked about it already, you know, going back to yesterday, but just also what you have to say on, you know, the particulars, the details on why, you know, Cooper maybe is getting that kind of feedback here, or the trade is, and just why it's like such a good fit.
Yeah, I think that the resounding positive feedback you're getting from, you know, the smart football community, the people who really dive into the player, the fit, all those kinds of things, are coming away with the same take, which is this is still a really high-level player. He has been a high-level player his entire career, but he's just been in a situation that has been pretty terrible for him and the rest of the offense there in Cleveland. And he can still run. He can still separate. It's not that he's a 4-2 burner. And even Brandon Bean said that. He's not like he's running by everybody, but, you know, you still see, what did Brandon Bean say? He ran high 4-3s, and you can still see that. But, you know, he gets separation in different ways, and he's a great route runner. He's super smart. And that's what, you know, Brandon Bean talked about. And I think that's what you're seeing from a lot of the feedback from people who are diving into the film, which is, yeah, this is a guy that he could still really play at a really high level. And now you give him, you get Josh Allen as his quarterback, and he's going to work really hard, and he's really smart, and he loves football. There's no doubt about that. So I see that. I think from the also reason why people are praising it, I mean, it's $800,000 on the cap for this player, right? Holy cow. I mean, what a, I had a buddy of mine text me today who's in the media, and he's like, what a coup for Brandon Bean, like $800,000. Look what the Jets are giving, you know, for Devontae Adams. You throw on there that they gave him a third round pick, but then they wind up getting a six back in return, and they still have all this draft capital next year. And we learned today, to make it official, that Brandon Bean did say that, sure, they'll remember yesterday you asked me and I said this is probably what it's going to be and this is what it's going to be. They're going to ride it out this year. They're going to see where it goes. He's not opposed to re-signing, though. Let's see where it goes, he said. But even if they don't re-sign him, they would get a comp pick for him in 2026 because he's a free agent. Now, he's a 10-year vet, and because of the rules, you could only get a fifth round at best. But the point is, there's a lot of, like, hey, we're bringing this player on, and that's there's not a lot the Bills are really kind of risking or giving up in this situation.
Yeah,
out of the drops, I'll say. Can I say this real quick?
Go ahead, please. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't go as far as you just did, Mike. I would say that they are a concern sometimes. His catch percentage in his career isn't that great. It's like 61 or 62%. I looked it up today. There have been some drops. And Brandon Bean did not shy away from that today and said, well, obviously, like, you don't – what did he say? Something like, you know –
there's
like,
one thing about his game.
Yeah. Everybody's gonna have some strengths and weaknesses, right, is what
yeah.
he said.
Yeah.
I would tell you, in our media room – you got John Scott, who grew up watching the Cleveland Browns, the Cleveland Browns fan. You got Josh Reed, who grew up watching Cleveland Browns fan. They watched a lot of Cleveland Browns football. John sat next to me today, and he said, and you guys could, you know, ask John too. He said, but you know, if you haven't, you can't just put this all on Deshaun. He said, I've watched this guy play a lot, and with the Browns, and sure, Deshaun has been a problem, but there have been times where Amari Cooper should have caught the football.
You mentioned talking to Connor McGovern. Did you have time to poll any other Bills players, particularly receivers, for how they're feeling about how all this is going down?
No, unfortunately, Bulldog, today, because it was a walkthrough, guys were kind of in and out. Like, we went in the field house, and they came in, and they left. And by the time I got in the locker room after Amari was done, literally, there might have been only
gotcha.
A few guys left. I did see Rasul Douglas. I was going to ask him about playing against him. I looked up, and I didn't see a game where he played against him. He played against Dallas. Didn't look like Cooper was in that game, and he did play against the Raiders. And I guess I think he actually Cooper did play in that game, but that was like back in 2017. So that's something I'd like to know too. So these guys, if they've ever played against them, I don't know if Amari's never played in Buffalo. He said, I don't think he ever played here. Actually, the one game they played was supposed to be here, but it got moved to Detroit.
Yes, that's right. It's a tricky one. It's not an easy puzzle, Douglas and Cooper, because they've both been on four teams in less than 10 years. So, like, yeah, you have to sort of. You have to look for it. It's not so obvious. Sal Capaccio on the West Shore Hotline. Well, Brandon Bean here, the author of this move. Nothing that I would say was surprising. Of course, he's not going to kind of be like, with respect to the Adams trade, you know, just sort of like anyway painted as reactionary. But you wouldn't be surprised either that it's always fluid, and it's not as simple as well. You know, our offense, our passing offense isn't what we want it to be. He wasn't really so much critical as he was just always having the door open for a move like this to happen. And I guess I would certainly have talked about it all the time. I wouldn't find that surprising. That's how it should be.
No doubt. And he even said, he went further and said a couple things. He said there was a team yesterday that he talked to or this week that said, basically, if they have three players in their team that if the Bills are interested, let them know before the trade deadline because they might be willing to move them because he's always having conversations. And he said, you know, by the time they get to the trade deadline between now and then, there could be another move made. If he likes something, they see it and they think it fits, but it's got to fit financially. That's a big part of it, right? They have to be able to, you know, fit the guy in. I asked Brandon Bean your question, guys, both of you, about going back to the Stephon Diggs trade and what the plan was. And is it something that you thought of that could happen? You're like, hey, let's see where this goes. Or is it more of a, hey, this becomes available? Unfortunately, I don't think I phrased it the right way, and he took it as me asking about Amari himself and if that was something they were monitoring. But he still gave a great answer, which was, I think gives you a little more of a picture on what we've talked about here. And the answer was actually pretty long. It was pretty detailed about how he's like, you know how he said, you know that we have guys on my staff that kind of track each team, right? There's a guy in charge of the AFC East or guy in charge of the, you know, AFC South. But everybody's got their different teams. And their sole job, like part of their job, is to literally monitor everything going on with that team from the inactive list. He said even like how they're getting in and out of the huddle, their body language, things they post on social media. And they're always looking for something that might give them an indication that maybe that player is somebody they should check in on with the team. Or if they've heard some rumblings, you know, through the back door, through agents or whatever, that something's going on. So I do think that that gets us more to they're always leaving that door open. It doesn't have to be the plan of we're just going to roll with these wide receivers and we're good. Oh, my God, we're not good. Let's go out and get Amari Cooper. I think it's more of, hey, this is who we have. We like it, but we're certainly not averse to adding someone. So I tried to ask him the question the right way. Maybe I didn't, but that's the answer he gave. I think he was more thinking about me asking more about Amari than the wide receiver group itself.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the effort anyways. Allen spoke today. Was he asked, Sal, about, you know, everybody eats and the receivers don't care about stats and no true number one guy? I mean, just like everyone else in lockstep all summer and into the early season, that was the rallying cry. And now he's got a guy that, you know, clearly walks into the building as the most accomplished, best receiver they've got on the team. Did Allen talk at all about that changing dynamic in the receiver room?
I have to go back and listen to these specific answers. Allen talked for quite a bit today and those specific questions and answers. But sure, I mean, He addressed just kind of like adding Cooper to the room in general. And, you know, listen, to a man, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, and Josh Allen all, hey, we have faith in the guys we have. This isn't about, you know, that we're sour on our guys or our group or anything like that. In some way, shape, or form, they all said something like this.
Right.
And they all believe that, hey, everybody's still going to have a chance to eat. Everybody's still going to have a chance, you know, to get the football. You know, Sean McDermott twice now in 2 days has said this is not about one player. It's always about the team. Right? I mean, that's been the messaging coming out. Even Brandon Bean said, as going back to the question we just talked about a minute ago, like even Brandon Bean said, like this move wasn't made because they don't like their wide receivers. It was made because here's a wide receiver who's really good and they can add to the group.
Tyler Bass came up, that subject, to in both press conferences, McDermott and Bean. The language is interesting, Sal, just like they're not really couching it. How it's gone for him, it seems more direct and frank how they're talking about Bass. Do you think Bass's days are numbered? Do you think that depends on, you know, how tryouts go for other kickers? Where do you think this goes?
First, I agree with you. One of the things I really took away from Brandon Bean is the very last question, too, is about he confirmed that they have kickers in for tryouts. They're going to do that after practice today, which was, you know, an hour or so ago, 2 hours ago. I thought the language was pretty, you know, kind of more aggressive than normal. You know, but not in a negative, not in a, oh my God, harsh aggressive, just truthfully aggressive.
Just realistic. Right? Yeah, right.
Yeah, very realistic. That's right. Which is, you know, that he said Tyler Bass is aware of what's going on. They've had conversations and they think you have to be better than what he's been. It hasn't been the production that they've wanted from him. And he said if there's an opportunity to, you know, improve there, they're going to have to make that opportunity. They're going to have to do it. That's what they have to do. I thought that was really interesting. Now, I'll go back to what I said about this from the very beginning. I don't know if you can find somebody off the street, so you're going to feel much more confident in Tyler Bass anyway. But at this point, maybe you have to do it. I don't really know. It's going to be super interesting, guys, to see where this goes because they're certainly looking.
Yeah, we had a caller earlier today, Sal, that, you know, wanted to defend Bass and was a little upset that so many people seem to be piling on him. You know, tough conditions in New Jersey on Monday night. The Jets guy missed a couple of kicks too, and that sort of thing. And my reply back was, you know, that's all fine. It's just that this has been ongoing, going back to late last year, the playoff miss, and then the summer was rocky. And the other thing I mentioned, at least my observation is this. I don't know if you're inclined to agree or not. But the missed kick he had, one of the misses he had earlier this year was just a shank, like an iron shot you hit off the hosel, right? And the missed extra point on Monday looked like that too. I know there was some debate about whether it was blocked or not, and whether the Jets reacted like they blocked it or not. But I thought
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Looking at replays of the missed extra point from Monday night, it looked like a similar trajectory before it could have been touched to the one he missed earlier this year.
I agree. There's still a debate on whether it was tipped or not, but either way, it didn't look like it was going to be a good kick, and it looked like it was going to miss pretty badly. At this point, you wonder about last year's kick against Kansas City, all the fallout from that, the mental aspect of these guys who, that's their one job to make these kicks, and there's a lot of pressure on them, right? And I know you're supposed to just go on to the next one. You have to be super mentally tough, and it can be tough to do that. You can get in these funks. You know, you're a golfer. I'm a golfer. We've all played. We've kind of compared it very similar to that. When it's not going right, you just start overanalyzing. You start thinking. Then you get in your own stuff, right? And it just hasn't been good enough for Tyler Bass. And, you know, one of the things that I know that they love about Tyler Bass is he's just got a little bit of an attitude about him, right? As a kicker, he comes in with the one eye black, and he's got this big leg, and he's making big kicks early in his career. And they love that about him, and I know they still do. And I think that they really just – they want so bad for him to be able to turn this around. But how much time – how much more time can you give for him to turn it around? It was tough conditions, you know, in New York, in New Jersey. I mean, you know, I talked with Sam Martin a little bit after the game about his one punt. You guys remember the 62-yard punt, right? It went in, and we even wondered on the broadcast, like, did he just do that intentionally, or did the wind take it? And he said right out to me, he goes, well, first of all, he said, it's actually like way different, like, than people probably think. It is really tough out there. And I'm just relating here. He said that punt, for example, he's like, I wasn't necessarily trying to get it in the end zone, but you don't really mind in that situation with the risk reward, because then it's still a 42 net. But, you know, it's very tough to kind of put it where you want to put it. And I'm thinking about, okay, Tyler Bass and what he's trying to do in that situation. But, listen, this is the NFL.
Right.
He kicks in Buffalo. And he's also missed kicks in domes and in warm weather stadiums. So how much more can we give that as an excuse, basically?
Right.
Wait, did you guys say that sometimes when you're playing golf, like, you sort of lose it? Because I don't I cannot relate to that. I don't know what that's supposed
Bulldog
to be.
Bulldog said hosel. Head off the hosel. Yeah.
I have no experience with, you know, the sort of wayward stretches.
Yeah, the hosel is right above the face of the club, isn't it? Like the part where
I don't know. I just don't know it by that term. I just learned something.
I thought that's where the shaft meets the iron. The head. I feel like that's
totally right. People are like, how do you not know that if you play golf? I'm like, I don't know. It's just my club. I pull my club out of the bag.
I could be wrong. I don't know. I might have just learned that on a video game or something. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I think it's right.
Okay. All right. Yeah, thank you.
I think you're right.
Bass has now missed 8 kicks in his last 8 games, including playoffs, not including preseason. I mean, that pace is not going to cut it. Narvison of Green Bay was 12 for 17 on field goals this year. Didn't miss an extra point. 4 of his 5 misses were outside of 40 yards, and they cut him for McManus today. Right. They made that move. So the Bills are just a little bit financially committed to Bass, but it sounds like they are ready to, or about ready to move on. We'll see. Sal, thanks for your time.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot.
That's our man, Sal Capaccio, on the Western Hotline. His reports are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
It's Braden Narvison. I woke up to this news today. I'm like, why do I need to – they're not on bye. Why do I need to sub out kickers on, like, these 8 teams? Because they cut this player. So he's somebody else. I guess he's out there now, too, if you want to do that. Number 44 for Green Bay. I kind of like the aesthetic there, the kicker wearing 44.
Yeah, yeah.
803-0550, Amari Cooper is here. You like the move. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog will look for your calls again after sports. The Sabres play tonight in Pittsburgh. Pregame at 6 here on WGR.
It's uncharted territory for me. The one time I did get traded mid-season, you know, the Cowboys, they had a bye week that same week, so I kind of had a lot of time to prepare, to know the system and things of that nature. So this is definitely new for me. At the end of the day, it's just football, you know. I think I'm a pretty cerebral guy, at least cerebral enough to learn the playbook as fast as I can so I can go out there and get lined up and just run routes, catch the ball, get open, you know, compete in the run game.
Love it. Amari Cooper in town with the Bills, number 18. That'll have to do. 803-0550 is our number. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, if you want to discuss with us this trade by the Bills. I'm not saying it's unanimous, because it's never unanimous. But as I mentioned to Sal, it does seem like this is a very popular idea. You know, outside of our, you know, cocoon.
Yeah, I do. I mean, the money is a key element of that. Like, it was a big reason why I thought the Bills could manage to acquire this player, whereas I thought Devontae Adams was a pipe dream if Vegas wasn't going to keep some money. Like, they literally did not have room for Adams' contract that the Jets took on. So, you know, maybe you could have paid more than the Jets paid to get the Vegas to keep some of that money, but it seemed, if the reporting was accurate, that Vegas did not want to do that, which it's ridiculous. Like, they play football in Las Vegas. It's got to be one of the wealthiest franchises in the league.
I don't know.
I just can't believe they're more worried about money than assets, but whatever. But, you know, the money part of it is, it doesn't make it have to work. You know, you can like it. Like, for me, I liked it as a facilitator for the deal. If the Bills could have afforded Devontae Adams, that would have been fine. I'm not that worried about the money for this year anyway. Like, I'd have been worried about anything in future years for either of these players at their age, and the Bills aren't committed to that. The Jets aren't really yet either. They've adjusted Adams' contract, but it still reads to me like they can walk, or he can walk, after the year. Like, they'll have that option anyway. He's under contract for the next 2 years, but the money is still preposterous. They stretched it out some here, so there'll be some penalty for them if they want to move on now and not be scot-free, but all the same. You know, the money isn't a factor in why it has to work. It's a factor in why they could pull it off. So, like, liking that part of it now almost feels a little, ancillary to me. Like, it's not really related to whether it's going to work or not. It played a part, I think a big part, in them making the deal. But from here on out, like, if he's making $5 million or $1 million, it doesn't really matter to me. I think he looks the part, and I'm optimistic about it working for them. You know, but you never know until you get on the field. He's got to find some chemistry with Allen and Allen with he, and carve out a role.
And really, I said this yesterday too, and I guess it's obvious, but winning that game Monday versus losing it is such a difference. I think, you know, the way I look at it, the way I feel about it, it's just such a difference. Than, I mean, if they lose that game and are tied with the Jets at 3-3 in first place, and Devontae Adams goes to the Jets and he's going to play this week, not actually hurt, I'm all better. I mean, I'm tight. Like, Tennessee is, you better get it. I mean, it's still kind of that. But even though the schedule seems to lighten up a little bit here, you're not even in the lead anymore. And when it comes to Amari Cooper, we're talking about, we haven't really talked about this much at all about Monday night, but it was somewhat more of the same with the Bills' passing offense. You know, it wasn't 9 completions, but it's still like there was just really no reliable go-to.
Nothing in rhythm, nothing like bing, bing, like, you know, snap, steps, here's the ball. It was a lot of Allen running away from stuff and making plays, and, like, he can do that, but you can't live like that. That's what Baltimore was that. I shouldn't say it was exactly that. I mean, the Coleman plays were on time in the Baltimore game. It's just that they're back shoulder, you know, jump balls for all intents and purposes. And that is not also neither how I'd want to live in my passing game. I need to see more sort of intermediate, middle of the field, like just a guy open. Allen gets the snap, 2.2 seconds, bam, it's, you know, 15 yards to an open guy. That, you know, and if you're going to play man, hopefully Cooper is a guy. He has shown to be this, even in the state he's supposedly in now with the drops and whatever's going on in Cleveland, he is still separating. So they need another guy. Shakir can do that when he's healthy, and I don't know how close to healthy he is. I mean, he did play in the game Monday night, but not a lot, which is an indication to me that he's not, you know, all the way back. So I'm not assuming he's going to be 100% for this Tennessee game, but Cooper should change how they're defended and what Allen's options are. Did you see that there's a chart that was making the rounds today about, I think it's EPA on first read passes. Mm-hmm. And Allen, the number is good, but the frequency isn't. Like they have success when he targets his first read, but he's able to do it as infrequently as any quarterback in the league, which to me, that is absolutely
no one's open.
No one's open, right?
Or so, the first guy.
Because what is the first read is, I think, should be the thing that you're expecting to spring open. We've designed this play this way, and we think like this guy will be where you want to go with the ball if it's against, if we're right about the coverage they're playing and all that sort of stuff that goes into it, and. You know, when that's there for Allen, it's successful, but it's just not there a lot. And hopefully Cooper changes that. I mean, I would hope here, maybe not right away out of the box on Sunday, first game, that he's a primary read, a first read on a lot of plays. But I think you're going to want to get there pretty quick because he's a guy, he and Shakir can separate.
And that right there is an example of how different I would be looking at all this had they lost Monday. Like, the urgency is just not the same. The Jets, the level of urgency, now it's two more losses now. They have four losses. But the level of urgency there, like, that was, we cannot afford another loss. Like, we cannot afford this. We need Davante Adams right now. Or as you would put it, RN.
Of course.
We've got to have Davante Adams, RN. And maybe this way we can save our season. Everything's pushed in on this season. The Bills, who do not have that burden anyway, but winning that game does that to them. And if Amari Cooper needs time to acclimate, I mean, I got it. Mm-hmm. I've got time.
Right.
I'm a 9-point favorite here. Do I need him to do anything on Sunday? I mean, the Bills would be a 9-point. They were a 9-point favorite anyway.
Yeah.
Against Tennessee, so that should be. Likeliest scenario anyway, the kind of game where you don't have to force anything when it comes to him or anyone else, I guess. Hopefully it just sort of comes to you. 25-16 is the implied. So it's just so different. I mean, if they're 3-3, if it's three straight losses,
mm-hmm.
and not on top of the table in the AFC East, we're kind of freaking out a little bit. And the margin is always so small because that game could have gone either way. But you know, so could the Houston game.
Right. That's fair.
I think they're where they deserve to be at 4-2. Are what your record says you are, all of that. Tennessee at Seattle. Miami here at Indianapolis. All right.
That doesn't seem that heavy.
Then the Chiefs and the Niners. And then it's different.
But yeah, right.
It's a little bit of smooth sailing here, perhaps. Luke is with us. Hi, Luke.
Hey guys, how you doing tonight?
Good, thanks, Luke.
Awesome. So I wanted to kind of bring up the trade for Amari Cooper here as it relates to the Stephon Diggs trade. I'm kind of looking at what we sent and got for Diggs. I think we sent Diggs and received a second and, you know, took on all of Diggs' dead cap. And then we got Cooper and sent a third. So I just think it's kind of like an interesting way to look at it, considering that, you know, they got rid of Diggs, said they wanted to do the everyone eats thing. That didn't really work out. So then they send a third, even though they had gotten back a second for Diggs, to get Cooper back, who's kind of like, you know, the same age guy type of, you know, receiver anyways. So I guess I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, like, did they just really not want Diggs there specifically, like a personality thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know. I wouldn't want to put my name on that's 100% of the reason. You know, I think it's believable. He certainly did not produce like he had earlier in seasons at the end of the last two seasons. So they could have had performance related reasons, but the dead money to me is the dead giveaway. I think you would have lived through the way I was talking, and this, you know, I didn't have to be right about this, but I felt like they might be worried about him. They're going to talk him up if he's on their team as still being a number one. Bean did that before the trade. And if there isn't a personal conflict, if there isn't some reason that they want to go the addition by subtraction route, they wouldn't eat $31 million. That's it. Like, if everyone got along well enough and no one was fatigued to whatever degree by Diggs's personality, he would have still been on the team. Because there's no way you eat $31 million. I think you just would have gone, okay, well, he's still good. I hope we can get what, you know, the first half of last year out of him again or something. I just don't think you'd eat that money if it weren't personal.
Yeah, I agree. All of it. There are conversations online like Diggs versus Cooper, and I just can't engage because the Bills clearly thought they had to get rid of Diggs or else, you know, he would still be here and everything you said. But they must have felt that. Nick Bakay, what don't we know?
Right.
Right? So I don't think it's a comparison that I can really – I don't feel like I need to have it, you know, that,
yep.
that piece of it because – Diggs, they decided that had to end, and after that, okay, well, what if we spread the ball around? What if we played 12 personnel? What if we drafted Keon Coleman? What if we did D, E, and F? And now it's to Cooper. So I'm fine here. Mike Schoep and the Bulldogs, Sabres pregame in about 15 minutes. Buffalo at Pittsburgh tonight. This is WGR. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, Joe Ostrowski tomorrow, and Paul, or Sal, rather, as well. And then it will be Paul again tomorrow because the Sabres play tomorrow night in Columbus, tonight in Pittsburgh. One game at a time, though.
But did you catch Columbus's opening last night? Just a tremendous, there's been so much outpouring of just good thoughts of the tragic death of Johnny Gaudreau and his brother over the summer. If you didn't catch it, I mean, wow. Reminiscent of Washington starting the game after Sean Taylor, their star safety, was murdered in his home. They started a game against the Bills with 10 players on the field. And no, you know, one of the safeties was not there. And Columbus lined up with Florida for the opening faceoff last night without a left winger there. So they had four guys on the ice. Florida lined up with a full complement. Official dropped the puck, and they let 13 seconds tick off the clock. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, so sad. The Sabres will be there tomorrow. Real quick, I was watching the Oregon-Ohio State game on Saturday night. Great finish. One of many great finishes in college football over the weekend. And Oregon did this thing where they ran a 12th man on the field right at the snap, leading to Ohio State just having that much tougher time advancing. They're running out of time as it is. And end up losing the game, and it was thought to help Oregon. I was happy to sort of pick up on that, and a lot of people did. I thought I was kind of snarky about it at first, like, is anybody going to talk about this? Like, didn't they do that on purpose? But it certainly did get traction to the point, well, not only to the point today, where they changed the rule.
Oh, I did not know this.
Now, you know, they're going to, what, put the clock back, or they're giving the offense a break when this happens to try to discourage or just eliminate.
Okay.
To whatever extent this was a practice. I'm not sure it ever happened before. The Oregon coach did admit it.
Yes, I saw that.
I was going to say that, too.
I didn't see the rules adjustment, but I knew the coach had said, yep, that was intentional.
Which, if you watch it and how they did it, you have to know that it was. I mean, just like the teams were lined up for the play, and the guy just ran out on the field against like trips. Ohio State might have been trips right, and that's the Oregon sideline, too, so it made it even easier. And the throw went to the single on the left, incomplete, so it worked to perfection for Oregon. and they won by 1 point. Sabres and Penguins tonight. We'll talk to Paul Hamilton about it after the update. This is Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.